Hello, my name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for listening today. And today I'm here with Marcia Meyer, who's an award-winning writer, teacher, published poet, and former director of the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. We're going to be talking about navigating the rough waters of today's publishing world. And a lot of what we're going to be talking about today comes from her book, which has the same name, which is Navigating the Rough Waters of Today's Publishing World, Critical Advice for Writers from Industry Insiders. And the subtitle is important there, too. And that was published in June of last year by Quill Driver Books. And Marcia is qualified to talk about all these things because she has an amazing writing background. She's freelanced or written for many publications, including the LA Times, Santa Barbara Magazine, Central Coast Magazine, OC Metro Magazine, the Seattle Times, and Arizona Republic. She's also a contributing writer to Miller McCune Magazine online and sometimes blogs with the Huffington Post. And she's been the director of college communications for a small liberal arts college, taught the college's journalism course, and advised the campus newspaper for 6 years. She was a print journalist for more than 20 years and worked for four daily newspapers. And now she tells me that she's getting an MFA, too. I mean, good grief, could anybody write more? So I also wanted to mention that Marcia will be offering workshops in Santa Barbara, too, and I'll mention those this year, and I'll mention those. We can talk a little bit about those at the end of the call. So, Marcia, you have the most amazing credentials, so welcome to the call.
Oh, thank you, Susan. That was a lovely introduction.
Well, I know that the waters of publishing are definitely rough and changing rapidly, so
yes.
I think I'll just kind of jump in with a lot of questions. The thing that I thought was really interesting about your book was that you gathered information from a lot of different people, so you got a lot of different perspectives.
I did. I interviewed more than 24 editors, publishers, writers from all over the country to kind of get a sense of what they thought was happening in the world, the publishing world, and where it was going, and specifically so that writers today can kind of get a sense of, well, what do I do with my career? How do I gauge my, you know, where do I go? How do I get published? What's happening? Should I consider self-publishing? Should I, you know, try the traditional route? What are the possibilities for online writing? I mean, there's just so much happening in the world today, in the publishing world. It's changing
yeah.
by the
So, I mean, one thing that I know concerns a lot of us who write for a living is that publishers have been cutting back on the number of books they are taking, and so it's really much more difficult for particularly new writers to get published. I mean, statistically, more books are being produced, but a lot of them are self-published or reprints or print-on-demand. I guess there's a lot of just a ton of print-on-demand stuff of things that have been out of print for 100 years, and that was like 750,000 books were from practically just one company that is selling essentially, like
old titles.
Old ancient titles, yeah, really yeah. ancient titles that are out of copyright that they can, you know, do whatever they want with.
That's
so,
right.
But that
yeah,
still doesn't,
yeah.
that still doesn't help, you know, there's kind of like more books, but fewer ways to get in now.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is true if you're talking about the traditional pathway, which was to get an agent and then have that agent sell your work to a publisher and then mm-hmm. wait a year while you work with an editor and they, you know, do all the production and the marketing and the distribution and all of that, which is the way the publishing world has worked for many, many, many decades. All of that's been thrown up into the air over the last couple of years.
So what are our best avenues for publication? I mean, I keep wondering, it's like, what the heck are agents going to do with themselves? I mean, is anybody signing with agents anymore?
I think that they're starting to ask themselves some of those questions. Actually, there are people still signing with agents. In fact, one of my clients just got an agent a couple of weeks ago for a really wonderful YA kind of paranormal novel that she has written. It's the first of a three-part series. And so, yes, there are still and what I tell my clients is to try that route first, depending on the title, depending on what the book is. I almost always advise them to try the traditional route first. Give yourself 6 months to find an agent, and then maybe give that agent another 6 months to sell the book. If it looks like it's just an exercise in futility, at that point, then you can look at should you go the self-publishing route? And honestly, it's kind of interesting. I was just reading, kind of prepping a little bit for our talk today, and there are many established authors who today are starting to go to the self-published platform on, and most of it's online.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some authors who already have a following, who already have that dreaded word platform, who already, have an established name as an author, that's a really good option today. And there are many, many places you can go to do that. But if you want to self-publish, there are other ways to do that too. And in fact, in my book, the biggest chapter in the whole book is on self-publishing. And there are three kind of levels of self-publishing that I talk about in that book. And the first one, of course, is kind of the Lulus and the Ex Libris, those POD publishers that are primarily online, and you can publish a book at almost no cost.
Mm-hmm.
I steer people away from that right now because the iUniverses, they still have a bit of that stigma, that self-publishing stigma,
mm-hmm.
especially among other people in the industry. And so, particularly if you're writing a novel, I don't think that's the way to go. It's very difficult to find success in that. If you are a nonfiction author, what I typically recommend to them, especially if you're writing a memoir or any nonfiction book that you can help promote on your own through a website or social network media, you can go to, and there are many, many small, what sometimes are called boutique publishers that not only do traditional publishing, but also offer author services. So they will, if you pay a percentage or all of the upfront cost to produce the book, and then they distribute it and help you with some, with design and production and all that stuff, and they do all the kind of work that a self-publisher, someone who truly does self-publishing, which is the third avenue, which I'll discuss in a second, would be doing. And so then you're actually paying for them to produce your book, and then you can go out and market it and sell it, and you can do a Kindle edition, you can do all those things if you want. And that might cost several thousand dollars. Some people pay as much as $15,000 or $20,000 to do a really fine book. But there are good publishers, good fine publishers, small publishers that will do that for you. And then the third way is that what I mentioned, that that's often thought of as true self-publishing, which is I take my work, I write it, I produce it in an online publishing program like Cork Express or InDesign. I lay it out. I sign a contract with a printer. I choose the I design the cover. You do everything from soup to nuts.
Yeah.
And it's a very tedious, very complex process, and unless you have some knowledge, some understanding of how those graphics programs work, if you don't know some of that stuff, I really tell people it's not really. I wouldn't attempt it. It's a pretty complex process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you've got to do all your own distribution, and you're probably not likely going to get into bookstores because most bookstores don't want to stock self-published works. You won't get into libraries. You won't, unless you have a tradition of publishing avenue to get you into those places.
Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting question that I've thought about for fiction. No matter how you publish, there's a lot fewer people who actually read. I mean, the amount of people who I think, you know, actually read, and I'm kind of unusual in that I read all the time, and actually read for pleasure. I read junk novels, what I call junk novels, which actually, I mean, they're not junk. They're actually very well written, and, you know, it's like, oh, my gosh, I wish I could write like some of these people. But I view them as, like, consumable books where, I mean, I can blaze through, you know, two books a week or something, and if I'm on vacation, I can gobble through, you know, just absurd amounts of books. But most people aren't like me. So it's like, that makes you wonder if there's even still a market for fiction writing and novels and
I think there is, but I you know, you're talking about mass market paperback kind of books.
Well, but even just, you know, like you know, just regular old fiction. I mean, I'm sort of an equal opportunity reader. I read all kinds of stuff, but yeah. I mean, being a new fiction writer, if you're trying to publish your first novel, you're not going to go to mass market paperback. You're going to be trying to get in with somebody, but who's going to find that neat novel from this publisher who, you know, from this small publisher when you're not already John Grisham, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's a very, very serious challenge.
Yeah.
However, there are, you know, there are a lot of people still reading. They're just not reading in the way that we think of sitting down with the book and reading it. Many, many people are reading electronic versions of books. Many people are reading online. Some of the newest names in fiction, I've had agents tell me they look on to the online fiction magazines like Fictionaut or Book Slut or McSweeney's Internet Tendency to look for new authors, new fiction voices. And then sometimes they find places, you know, they find some of those people find homes with the more literary publishers, the smaller ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to be a mid-list author today. You're either a Grisham where you're still going to be published by one of the top five, you know, big houses in New York, or you're a smaller voice, and those people are the ones who are having to find a different way to make their way in the writing world, because the big publishers are not buying from people like us, unless you're already an established celebrity. Forget it. You know, so then we have to find new ways. So we go to the mid-sized publishers and the literary publishers and the regional publishers and some of the genre publishers like the Poison Pen Press, which does mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And you find, and for example, Quill Driver Books, which is the publisher that published my book, does mostly writing books.
Mm-hmm.
So you find a place, you find the niche that works best for you, and then you just market the heck out of it yourself. I'm actually feeling very fortunate because Quill Driver actually has a publicist on staff, and he was very helpful to me. I didn't expect them to help much with my marketing and publicity when the book came out, but they were helpful. I ended up doing most of my own. I mean, I did my own website and I did most of my own speaker, you know, engagements. But they did help me put together a book signing. They sent out press releases. They, you know, I think they were responsible for you finding me to do this teleseminar.
Yeah.
So, you know, so they were very helpful, more helpful than I expected them to be, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's actually really unusual, because most of the time, I mean, you know, for some of the things I do, like they found out, or your publicist found out about me because I did help a reporter query to say that we were looking for speakers, and so obviously the Quill Driver publicist is out there looking out for you, which is really cool. And I have to say that almost everybody else that I heard from was the author themselves, not the publicist from the publishing company. In fact, last month we had someone whose book was just published by Wiley. He contacted me. John Wiley and company did not contact me.
And Wiley is a pretty good sized publisher.
And yeah, they're huge.
But you'd think that they have all, you know, that they would be willing to do that. But if the author is not selling, you know, like buku books for them, they're going to put their publishing, their publicist efforts into those big sellers. So those of us who are the mid-list level authors, we got to get up there and beat the bushes. And that's why some of them are starting to go to these other platforms to get their work out there. There's a website called Scribd.com, which allows, if you, I'm just starting to look into it because I think I'm finding it very intriguing in terms of finding a place where I can sell some of my earlier works, like columns that I've written from years ago and, you know, certain things that I've written that I would love to get out there. And you can set up a Scribd account. And you can sell your work. It can be writing, it can be photos, it can be documents. I mean, you can put anything you want on there, and you can sell it for whatever you want to set your price for. People could download individual columns, they could download a collection, they could download a short story, they could, and then, then whoever's willing to pay the price, you can make some good money. There's I don't know if you heard about this young woman. I wish I could remember her name. I just read about it last week. She's 26 years old. Last April, she's written like four novels or something, and she put them up on, I'm not going to remember. I think it was her own website, and just marketed the heck out of them. And she sold 385,000 downloads of her books since last April.
Yeah.
Which is just phenomenal.
Actually, a lot of people, I think I might have read about that. Another mid-list author who is actually really being vocal about self-publishing is Joe Conrath. And he made $20,000 in Kindle sales off, I think in December. And his Kindle books are $2.99, but because he's not going through a publisher, he's not giving a publisher any cut, so he's getting 70% of that. So I mean, he sold like hundreds of thousands of books, and it's starting to, as he puts more and more of them into Kindle, his whole backlist is kind of coming back in, and he's actually said that he's never going to publish with a publisher again.
Yeah, I saw that was a story in the LA Times a couple of weeks ago. It was a fabulous. I mean,
that was a great article.
Stephen King and Paulo Coelho and Stephen Covey—they're all starting to say we're just going to self-publish our works on, you know, either Amazon's Kindle bookstore or through Amazon's digital text platform or Sony's Reader Store or Barnes and Noble has Pubit now. You can self-publish anything.
Yeah.
And the royalty rates are way, way much higher than what you would get from a traditional publisher. The cost differential is just, you know, it does. When you start looking at the breakdown, it's like, why wouldn't you self-publish if you have the following and you know that you can sell your books or you have a way to get out to the readers? Why not do it?
Well, and actually, I mean, personally, I did the same thing. I was traditionally published for. Some of my books, and then I discovered essentially true self-publishing, but I also use a printer that's a print-on-demand printer, so I can actually make, you know, when I was traditionally published, I think I made maybe 50 cents a copy in royalties, and obviously I got an advance, but most books never earn back the advance, so now it's like I'm making $10 a book instead of 50 cents. So it's like for me it was like I'm never going to sign with a traditional publisher again unless they give me a six-figure advance. And since they're not giving it that out anymore, it's like no way.
That's right. So, yeah, why not if you have the ability, you know, and you know, honestly, it's not hard. It's not difficult. It's just a matter of educating yourself.
Well, and also creating something good. I think that a lot of people go, oh, I'll just put out crud, and then it doesn't sell, and they wonder why. It's like, you know, I always tell people that it really needs to be comparable to what's coming out of Wiley or
Or better.
Quill Driver, or better, yeah. If you can come up with a, you know, better covers that work, particularly that work better online, that people can see, even when they're itty bitty tiny thumbnails on Amazon, then you can make these changes because you're not, you know, it's not going to go through a committee or something to decide.
That's right. We're essentially eliminating the gatekeepers, and
exactly,
it's kind of like the Wild West out there. It's really frightening, but it's also kind of, what I tell everybody. It's like, and this is the book says, there's opportunity in here. You know, this is a tremendous opportunity for writers. If you educate yourselves, you figure out what's going on. You look at opportunities that present themselves in every venue across the country, not only just books, but magazines and newspapers and online, you know, magazines, and all kinds of opportunity is out there. You just have to figure out the best way to get onto the wave and ride it.
Mm-hmm. So as far as you know, different genres of books, it's like some people are having success with fiction, which is starting to change too. I think that, you know, the self-publishing, a lot of people who are in nonfiction, like, I mean, think about Dan Pointer. He's been advocating self-publishing forever. And,
yeah, that's 20 years.
Yeah, at least 20 years. And but with that said, it's always been much easier to deal with nonfiction, because then, you know, like we're talking about, it's much easier to market it online because you can find little crowds of people who happen to be interested in whatever the topic of your book is about. But
exactly,
with fiction, it has been a little bit more difficult, but I think the tide is turning, because
mm-hmm.
even now fiction genre, you know, websites and groups are kind of popping up, and I think that people are talking about, you know, I like, you know, you're getting more word of mouth online, even about fiction, too. And
mm-hmm.
I think there's
a huge book blogging community that's helping promote lots of new works that are coming out. They're not limiting themselves to traditionally published books. They write about all kinds of things. So
mm-hmm.
I think fiction, I think, is a little bit harder because people tend to think of it as only, you know, that it's only available through traditionally published way, you know, avenues. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for fiction writers out there. It's a little harder to break through the gatekeeping system, but you know, if you want to publish online, which of course, you know, used to get people would say, oh, don't ever put your work online because, you know, you'll never be able to sell it, or if it's online, it's considered published, and you'll never publish it. Another publisher will never publish it, and all of that's kind of all dissipating. It's not true.
Yeah. So what about short stories? I mean, what about people who write short stories? Is there any market for that? I haven't seen much of anything about that.
Well, I think the short story market is really still just the literary magazines.
Yeah.
You know, the short story collections that you see that come out occasionally, usually by an author who's already well-known as a novelist, the publishers will publish their collections mostly just because they want to make the author happy. But but I think, you know, I mean, I love to write, to read short stories. I'm kind of, and there's some question about whether they're, you know, even though the traditional publishers don't see them as huge sellers, I think there is a market for them. But I do think, you know, that for a writer, the way to do that is to write short stories and send them into literary magazines and see if
mm-hmm.
you can get them published and get into anthologies and get it, you know, and then once you have a collection, of course, many writers too are doing what are called kind of the linked stories, so a novel and short stories essentially. So they're kind of linked stories that tell a story with a narrative arc that is overarching.
Mm-hmm.
And many authors are kind of moving into that kind of a fiction of a novel as well. But I do think there's a market there. It's maybe a little harder to find.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not obviously not going to be lucrative, especially at first.
Yeah.
But you
I
know,
think
I think
it never has been.
No. But, you know, you take an author like Catherine Ryan Hyde, who has now written, I think, about 13 or 14 novels. I think the last five or six have been for the YA market. But she started out writing short stories. And she got her first agent because the agent saw one of her short stories in a literary magazine and contacted her and said, do you have any other work and are you represented?
Huh.
So it's still worth doing. Even if you don't get paid by a literary magazine, it's still worth doing.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, historically, short stories and, you know, the only thing worse is as far as being lucrative or not lucrative, as the case may be, is being a poet.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's tough.
That's like my advice for poets, too, is just, you know, just keep your day job.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is like, is she going to say keep your day job?
Keep your day job and send your poems in and you know, just wait. And then when you get your first poetry collection, I mean, you're still going to, you're just nothing. I have very good friends who have several collections of poetry already published. And they, you know, they teach or they, you know, they
yeah.
just, unfortunately, a poet just isn't going to make, I mean, even the poet laureates of the United States don't make money on their poetry or,
yeah.
or you know, look at Ted Kuczynski, who was an insurance executive until he retired a few years ago. So, you know, poets just have, and I think they understand that they end up, you know, in academia or something. Short story writers, I think, you know, there's more opportunity for a short story writer to either sell their works online, either as collections or as individual short stories, or to, you know, ultimately maybe attract a publisher in a more traditional fashion. But,
the other possibility for that, actually, now that I think about it, is that, I mean, that's actually another good avenue for the Kindle because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of people use their Kindles when they're traveling or commuting. And, you know, you can read a whole short story on your commute, probably. So there might be sort of a hidden market there. It might be worth trying to even self-publish short stories and put them into the Kindle. I mean, they're putting more and more things like, you know, magazines and even, you know, some newspapers and stuff are going onto Kindle, too. So.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. In fact, there's some apps for the iPad. I think The Economist has a phenomenal iPad application that just is, I mean, people that I've heard talk about it, it's like almost better than the print version.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So definitely, you know, I don't know if you've seen the Alice in Wonderland application for the iPad. There's once in a while you'll see it go around that there was a demonstration of what this one company, which I cannot remember the name of it right now, but they have developed an interactive application that is Alice in Wonderland, the story, but with graphics and artwork and moving pieces and parts and the smiling Cheshire Cat, and just it's unbelievable. And I think that's the future of books. I think it's just one of the most amazing things that you can see. It's like, you know, with the Kindle, or I even sometimes read some of the classics on my iPhone, you've just got your text. But this brings in unbelievable interactive involvement and delight, really, in with the book. It's pretty interesting.
That's kind of interesting to think about from the standpoint of children's books, where you could actually see the white rabbit go down the hole.
Exactly. That's what it does. It's a
really
cool application. Yeah.
Wow. So as far as other forms of writing, I mean, one thing that, I mean, in some ways the book publishing industry is sort of following the newspaper publishing industry in that, you know, more traditional publishers are kind of folding or bookstores are closing, but that's been happening for newspapers too. So, I mean, what about people, you know, does anyone go to journalism school anymore? And if so, what do they do after that?
It's really sad. It's, you know, I've been actually watching, you know, as I was a newspaper writer and editor for 20-some years and then and still write for some. And I actually was on the board of advisors for Cal Poly San Luis Obispo Journalism Department for about 15 years. So I've watched what's happened in the industry. And it's been very sad, honestly, for someone who has grown up kind of, you know, with ink oozing out of my pores. But,
yeah.
But I do think there's, you know, what most kids are doing at the journalism department at Cal Poly is mostly PR now. They have three emphases. One was broadcast, one was print, and then one was PR. And the PR aspect of it has grown and grown over the years, and the other two have less shrunk. Mm-hmm. So, and I think you're seeing most kids who are interested in journalism going into broadcast today.
Yeah.
It's harder and harder. You've got all of these, old dyed-in-the-wool journalists out there out of jobs now looking for online work, which is few and far between and doesn't pay anywhere near what it used to. And it's a pretty, pretty tough market for a serious print journalist these days.
Yeah.
That said, I write for Miller McCune. I can make as much for them as I have, and in fact sometimes more than I have for some magazines that I write, some print magazines I write for. So there's still a market there, but you got to be good, and you got to put yourself out there to make connections and network, and honestly, networks are even more important today for writers than they ever have been, even though they've always been important.
Mm-hmm.
But finding and being able to sell a pitch. If you don't know how to sell, pitch a story idea to a magazine or a newspaper online today, you better, brush up, because that's the only way you're going to get work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That actually brings up a good point, is that, the internet has changed a lot of things. How has it changed the way writers actually write?
Mm-hmm.
It's changing how they're getting work, but is it changing how they actually write? Are people writing, you always read about the advice for writing online, is that you need to write shorter sentences, lots of bullet points. Is it actually really changing the language too?
I think it might be. I agree with what you just said. I think it is forcing writers to write differently. One of my experiences when I started writing for online magazines was how much easier it was to, for example, in the old days, print journalists, you would have to explain concepts or explain, if I was talking about mental illness or schizophrenia, I would have to take a paragraph and explain that schizophrenia affects,
mm-hmm.
a certain percentage of the population and what age they start, all that stuff. Now, when I write the word schizophrenia, I can hyperlink it to one or two of the best, sites on the web for explaining what it is, and move on. So if the reader
that's
doesn't
true.
Know, it makes it so you can write much more cohesive, concise work, and not waste time, repeating information that you can get by clicking on a link to go to another page. So that, in one way, I think it forces writers to be a little more. Forces writers, but in a way frees up writers to write about more interesting and innovative stuff rather
mm-hmm.
than repeating, information that you can find other places. Another thing I've seen with magazines is that, the old days you used to always pitch ideas about how to find this information or in travel, what this city offers and blah, blah, blah. Well, you don't need that anymore because they can put all that information up online and it's static and it stays there forever. So now you have to think about something new and different about that city that you're visiting, or a different aspect of, traveling to Italy. You got to be a lot more creative in the way that you're thinking about what you want to write about. And that's kind of fun, That's kind of fun. So, yes, it's absolutely changing the way that writers are writing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we're not going to get into writing in the shorthand that you see on texting and stuff. I text with my daughter all the time. I'm pretty proficient with text ease these days, but I don't see that happening, in serious articles online.
Yeah,
so.
We can only hope. That's
we can hope that we don't see that come around.
So you had mentioned, getting an agent and spending that 6 months trying the sort of tried and true approach. If you're a first time author and you're just starting out, what's the first step you would want to take?
For fiction or nonfiction, or does it
Just looking for an agent. I mean, if you want to be traditionally published, you know, what would be the first step? I mean, some people, I had an agent. When I looked for an agent, I was in a very specific genre, and I basically found an agency that I knew some of their writers and said, yo, will you represent me?
No, that's still a valid way to do it. Honestly, if you, it's all about genre, you know, so you want to find, and you can do searches of agents. They're so easy these days with Google. I still like Jeff Herman's Guide to Literary Agents, Book Publishers and Editors. That's, I think, one of the best in the business. But but you can do a Google search. You can do a Google search for, you know, science fiction agents, and you'd get a huge list.
Yeah.
So you can you go by genre, find agents who represent works that you're familiar with or that you like.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a good thing. And with fiction, you just send a query letter. Maybe a couple of sample chapters. It's almost all by email submission these days. First thing you do is check the agency submission guidelines. Make sure you follow each individual agency's guidelines. But typically they ask for a query and maybe a couple of sample chapters. Even if they don't ask for sample chapters, I would send them because it's so easy to do. I had an agent tell me one time that, you know, even though agents sometimes say they don't want you to send sample chapters, if you hook them with the query and they've already got the chapters right there, that they're more likely to go into it and read right away than, you know, take the time to stop and say, oh, I'll email that person later for the chapters, and then you've kind of lost their interest. So, the philosophy is maybe, you know, send them anyway. But, so you want to do that with fiction, always a query with a couple of sample chapters first. And then and I would make a list of 20 agents to start out with, and know the agencies and or the work that they do well enough so that you can make each one, you can personalize it. So you can say something like, I see that you represented, you know, Sandy Miller, and I loved her book on blah, 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 similar to the kind of work I write in, you know, just so that you give that agent an understanding of the fact that you've picked them specifically because you know a little bit about what they do or what they represent.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a good thing to do. If you're doing nonfiction, obviously you want to do a book proposal. So you have your book proposal, and it needs to be clear and concise, and it needs to be detailed. You know, most book proposals are 25 to 35 pages or more.
Mm-hmm.
They include a complete outline for the book, a good description of what the book's about, almost like a query letter. You could even take a query letter and make it the description of your book, modify it a little bit. Then you want to do your outline. You want to do your, sections on who you are, how come you're the best person to write that book, what your credentials are. You want to have a marketing and promotion section. You want to have an assessment of what other titles are out there that are similar to yours and why yours is different and or would be a better, or would draw a different readership. All of that stuff has got to be included in the book proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of, two or three sample chapters of the book proposal. And all of that then goes to the agent with an introductory email, and maybe, again, a little explanation of why you picked that agent, something that you know about them or about their writers that will give them a reason to read a little bit farther and to read your book proposal. So those two things. And, yes, I do think it's worth trying to get an agent first unless you are, say you're writing a book on this. I think one of the examples I use in my book is, an antique clock, and you already have a huge following. You've been writing a newsletter on antique clocks for a long time, and you've got 2,000 or 3,000 people on your newsletter email list, and you've got a following because you've been blogging about antique clocks, and you've got a website where people know they can come for information. Then you can do your own, do your own book or send the book proposal directly to a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
My publisher takes book proposals directly from authors. In fact, that's what I did. I sent the publisher an email and said, I'd like to do a book on this. He said, sounds great. Send me a proposal.
That's that's got the added advantage that you don't have to give away 15% to an agent.
Right.
The you know, an agent would probably say that, oh, but you probably didn't negotiate the contract as well as you could have, because an agent would have earned back more than that, you know, just because of getting you better terms and blah, blah, blah. But, you know.
Well, I think that's maybe true. But on nonfiction books, this is a pretty standard contract. You know, you can, and you can, again, you can go look up what a standard contract would look like on, you know, you Google a standard book for nonfiction. You can
do your research.
Standard. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just that really the web opens up an amazing new world for us, because we can do so much of it on our own if we want to. If you want to pay the 15% to an agent, have them take all that headache off of your shoulders, and you've got a, and the agent's excited about your project and they want to represent you, that's great. Go for it. But, you know, honestly, there's so much more an author can do for him or herself these days. That
I negotiated my first two traditional book contracts. I didn't even know I was supposed to have an agent. It was only after that that I got an agent, and then she never even really, she got me a writing gig, for which I gave her 15% for umpteen years, but it wasn't actually a book. And so, you know, sometimes, and I thought about that afterwards. I was like, you know, would she really have negotiated a better rate on my books than, because, I, you know, mine were nonfiction, too. And like you say, it was kind of standard. They were going to pay what they were going to pay, and they weren't going to pay anything else.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, so that's actually a really good point, that maybe it's, you know, depending on how resourceful you are, it may be, this is what I mean. I think many agents may be wondering, oh, dear, what are we going to do now?
Yeah,
because people are kind of, they're empowered now. It's like, uh-oh, I don't need you anymore.
You know, and there's pressure from both sides, because you've got all of those editors that got laid off from the publishing houses, and they're going into agenting because that's, they figure they can make some, you know, some money doing that. So they're putting pressure from that end. And then we've got the authors who are figuring out they don't really need an agent to do certain things for them anymore. So,
They should do is be freelance editors and then edit all those self-published books that desperately need editing.
And that's what, you know, honestly, that's how I support myself. And I'm a writer and I'm a book editor these days, and I'm doing very well. I have lots and lots of work. So
a lot of people need editors. Yeah.
They do. All of us need editors. All of us. I mean,
everybody.
Oh, my gosh. I was just telling a client the other day, I said, you know, you haven't lived until you open up the newspaper and see a typo in 36-point font that you looked at for half an hour the night before and signed off on.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, oh, I can't believe I looked at that page for half an hour and didn't see that typo in 36-point font. But, that's what happens. We all need another set of eyes.
That's for sure. Well, here's a question that I've heard a lot of sort of back and forth on is whether or not writers should start a blog before they have finished their book. Two schools of thought on that.
There are. I'll tell you what my schools of thought are on that. I think for a nonfiction writer, yes. Start, whatever your, you know, topic is and you're an expert on it, start blogging, because you're building a platform. Start blogging, start, you know, offering value-added information on Facebook and Twitter and driving people to your blog and developing your name as an expert in that field. That can only help you when you get to the point where your book is ready to be published. If you're a fiction writer, I had someone ask me this question, and someone said, oh, no, you should start blogging right away. But you know what? Honestly, fiction writers, you write the book first. You know, we have so many people who say they want to write a novel, and they get started, and they never finish it. And if you get sidetracked by blogging, I don't even know what you would, you know, honestly, unless you were writing about the writing process, I don't know what a novelist would blog about anyway. That has to do with the novel, if you understand what I'm saying. I mean, they might have expertise in other things, and they might be interested in blogging about politics, but that's not going to necessarily sell the novel. I think you want to write the novel first, finish the book, and then, you know, figure out what's the best way to use social media to develop a strategy for selling it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, that is one of the things that I've heard is that sometimes when people start blogging, they actually stop writing other things. So that book that was gathering dust in your drawer that you were going to finish up never gets finished, and the novel remains unwritten because you got distracted blogging about, you know, usually it's something completely unrelated, and
right.
You get into the realities of how much can you stand to write in any given day.
If you're a nonfiction writer, you might end up, you know, that blog might turn into a book for you. That's happened for a number of people. I mean, you know, Julie and Julia started out as a blog. And there are many writers who are getting offered book contracts based on their blogs these days, which is great. But they're not novelists. They're mostly nonfiction authors. And,
yeah, that's true.
So, you know, novelists and short story writers, I mean, if they're, and some of them are, you know, if you want to publish an occasional piece with McSweeney's or, you know, fiction art, that's a way to go. But honestly, I think I would just focus on writing the novel first and finish it, and then start figuring out, you know, how you're going to get it published and promoted.
Yeah. So you mentioned social media and stuff. I know that, you know, I've talked to a lot of writers that have fair amount of resistance towards things like Twitter and Facebook, and I mean these are all kind of enormous distractions from writing, after all.
They can be, absolutely.
And you know, are these things really, you know, necessary for writers, or should the novelist just go back to writing her novel? I mean,
I think they're necessary today. If you don't know how to use Twitter and or Facebook and or a blog to promote your work, I don't know how you're going to get found. You know, it's the place where books are going to be sold. And it is one of those things where I had a client say to me one time, I'm not going to learn all that stuff. And I said, well, you're not going to probably get a book contract then, because one of the things that the book publisher wants to know is what are you going to do online and through social networks to promote the book. If you're not willing to do it, they're not probably going to be willing to publish your book for you.
Yeah.
It's important. It's really important to be savvy about it today. And also, as you said, it can be a huge time sink, so you want to make sure that you're using it efficiently and effectively. So you used to do a traditional marketing plan. You do one for online media, and you say, okay, you know, on this date when the book comes out, I'm going to do a virtual book tour in these cities, or I'm going to do, you know, and I'm going to tweet this many times a day. And, you know, there's a program, and I can't tell you what it is off the top of my head, but there's a program where you can set up your tweets for the day. So you can schedule them, so you can do all.
There's more and more of those tools. I just found another one that does it, actually, and you can set them up. Yeah, I mean, if you're really ambitious.
So you write two or three of your tweets, and then you set them up to come out over the course of the day, and then you go back to writing your next book, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Or, you know, even tweets over the next month or the next 6 months.
Yeah, you can
set
them up as long as you want, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you spend, you know, one weekend doing something really boring, like typing in tweets for the next 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can more or less forget about it. And
exactly.
And
you can connect your tweets to LinkedIn and also to Facebook. So anything you tweet gets automatically posted on both of those sites. And that just adds, you know, that extends the reach of what you're sending. So you got to remember that what you want to make sure that whatever you're tweeting is valuable to people. So you're giving them either information, or you're giving them, you know, I like to do kind of fun quotes from writers, or I retweet probably more than anything, and I'll just retweet information about publishing and or books and or writing that I see other people tweeting, and it just it's just helpful. You know, you don't want to, and then I'll also, if I have a workshop coming up, I'll you know, promote it either on Facebook and Twitter. Usually both on Twitter and Facebook, because you can do more, you can put more information on Facebook. Then you can also use Facebook, of course, to email your groups directly with information. You can invite them to an event, you know, which I'll do with my workshop. So you can actually reach them directly in different ways. So it's always helpful to look at those different things that you can do. But yeah, you really just need to sit down and write a whole marketing strategy for social network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another thing where, again, Google is your friend, because I mean there's so much information about how to market with social media now that it doesn't have to be really that mystifying. Because I mean the other thing is that tools like Twitter and Facebook are made for even non-technologically advanced people, so they're usually pretty easy to get set up with.
They are.
You know? So it's like you don't have to be intimidated.
That's right, yeah. But even someone who is, I mean, I'm doing one of the workshops that you mentioned earlier. The first one I'm doing in February, late February, is on using social media for writers. And I'm just repeating one that I did in September because it was so successful. And it's really just a kind of a crash course on, okay, how do you set up a Facebook account? What do you put on it? How do you, you know, how do you link it? How do you do a Twitter account? How do you link your Twitter to your to LinkedIn? And, you know, kind of very basic step-by-step stuff. And then talking about whatever their writing projects are and how could you most effectively use social media to help you with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and I, there are a lot of writers who are absolutely freaked out, especially older ones.
Absolutely freaked out is the word.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, what do I do with this? I have no idea. They are so adrift in this new world that just having someone kind of take your hand and go, here, let's, you know, bring your computer, bring your laptop. I'll show you how to do this.
Yeah. And there's actually more, you know, depending on where you live. I mean, if you're not in Santa Barbara or whatever, it's like depending on where you live, there's probably, even if, you know, there's probably adult education courses.
Oh, absolutely.
There's there's ways you can learn this stuff really easy. And actually, even online, if you have a decent internet connection, there's things like video training and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if you don't want to leave your chair, you can
that's
learn
right.
it.
Yeah. Twitter are very simple, honestly. You're right. They're intuitive, and if you go on, you can pretty much set up your own accounts and stuff. But when you get into something a little more complicated, like, you know, do you need a website? Should you do WordPress, or should you do, for example, I have Squarespace, which hosts my websites, and I actually did them all by myself with their templates.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a little while. They've got great video tutorials that tell you how to set up your, you know, how to import photos, how to design fonts, how to, you know, so it's very doable. But again, you have to be willing, you know, put a little time and effort into learning it all.
That's true. Or paying someone else to do it for you.
Exactly.
And I mean that's the same thing with the book production options. I mean, if you decide to truly self-publish, you don't necessarily have to do it all yourself. The only thing you have to do is go buy your own ISBN. Beyond that, you can get a graphic artist to lay out your book. You can get a cover designer. You can get an editor like you. And, you know, it's like you don't have to be an expert in all these things. And to create a website, you don't have to become a website expert.
In fact, I'll tell you, if you have a community college in your community, as we do here in Santa Barbara, one of the best, finest little city colleges, they have a media, a social media department, and I'll tell you, those kids, they work for cheap.
And, cool.
And they could put a website together for you in no time. I mean, much faster than you would ever expect. And, you know, and you pay them, you know, what, $20 an hour or something, and they get a little money, and you get a website in no time, and they can even show you then how to keep it updated or, you know, whatever you need. So
yeah, there's a lot more options because it's all, you know, it's all just become much more accessible. It's sort of, you know, all these things have sort of filtered down from nerds to normal people because there's a lot more tools that make it, you know, easier to, it's just a lot easier to do. I mean, speaking as one who was one of the nerds many years ago, it's like, I mean, all this stuff is a lot easier to do. And, I mean, even book design, I mean, a lot of, again, community colleges or colleges have a graphic design department, and some of their students who are learning how to use InDesign or whatever, they'd, swoon at the opportunity to have a project like a book cover.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Yeah, so there's a lot of opportunities even if you don't, you don't have a lot of money or time yourself to get help. But anyway, I should probably, before we close out here, I should mention your other workshops. The first workshop that you mentioned on social media, if you need this, is on February 26th, and you said that they're all in Santa Barbara, right?
They're all here in Santa Barbara, that's right.
And the second one is on May 21st, and that's about finding your voice in memoir.
And
the last one is on September 17th, and it's about revising your own work and editing your own fiction or nonfiction.
That's right. That's right. So, and all of them are one-day workshops. They're from 9 to 5, and they're just, we had a lot of fun at the last one. A really nice location, great room. It's all, you know, completely wired so we can do anything we want on Google and laptop connections and all that kind of stuff. And
this is good stuff.
And anybody, if they, the February workshop information is on my website right now, which is just www.marciameier.com. It's MarciameiR.com. And the other two will be up in the next few days. So all that information will be available, and you can sign up online. I have a PayPal account as well. So.
Cool. So is there, any final thoughts about people who are trying to navigate the tough waters of rough waters of publishing?
Absolutely. Don't be discouraged.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's all about, I mean, there's a lot of, uproar and upheaval, and it's scary and all kinds of stuff, but, you know, there's just tremendous opportunity out there right now. And if you, just stick to your guns, keep writing, know what your writing goals are and pursue them, find the new ways that you need to, find the new things you need to know about to get, to make yourself successful, and go for it. There's lots. I mean, there's always one of the agents and editors I talked to for my book. She said, there's always room for a story well told, whether it's traditionally published or you do it through, print on demand technology, however, but there's always going to be a market for a good story. So
that's true.
Tell a good story.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's a good way to close out, since we're kind of out of time, but I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be here. And for those of you who are listening later and would like to get more information about Marcia's book, you can find it online at www.navigatingpublishing.com. And like Marcia said, her website is www.marciameier.com as well. You can find out information there, too. So thank you, everybody.
And of course, you can buy the book at Amazon, too. So.
That's true. Or from Quill Driver Books, which is where I found
information
about it. So, take a look at it. It's good reading. So thanks again.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you. I've enjoyed it. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Okay, well.